I'm delighted to welcome a very special guest to Simply Folk. John McCutcheon is one of the most dynamic and iconic performers in folk music today. He's heading to Wisconsin soon, and he's joining us from the studios of public radio station WABE in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome, John.
Hey, it's great to be back in Wisconsin, even if it is just digitally for right now.
Well, you'll be here in person pretty darn soon.
Yeah, the analog version of me is going to arrive there day after Halloween, playing in my hometown of Wausau.
You were born in Wausau?
I was born and raised, or bred and buttered, as my mother used to say, right there in Wausau. I lived the first 18 years of my life there. It's a wonderful town, and I'm lucky enough to go back there pretty frequently.
Do you still have family in Wisconsin?
I have a good bit of family in Wisconsin. I've got a couple of sisters, one in Appleton and one in Eden near Fond du Lac. And my dad and my stepmother both still live in the Wausau area. So,
yeah.
And I got lots of friends, musical friends and old high school friends. And I'm one of the many thousands of owners of a certain professional football team. So it's nice to get back and check in my investments, you know.
The only publicly owned football team.
Yeah, socialist football. You got to love it. You know, only in Wisconsin.
Well, it usually works pretty darn well.
It does. It's nice to sort of sit on the sidelines and make fun of all the foolishness that all the other owners are doing in other parts of the country.
We have to talk about the union activity a little bit. We talked about the refs and what happened in Seattle with the Packer call. And I know that brought a lot of Wisconsin people talking about unions. And you have been an activist, and you are active in your own musicians' union for quite some time. Has that been a lifelong interest of yours?
Well, it has been. You know, I started off when I was a kid playing the guitar. I got one for my 14th birthday. My dad got me a little mail order guitar, and I don't think he ever figured that I would go so far down that road. My family didn't have a lot of money, so if I was going to learn how to play, I couldn't afford lessons. And I went down to the Marathon County Public Library and checked out a book called Woody Guthrie Folk Songs. And had no idea who Woody Guthrie was. I mean, you know, we'd sung his songs in school, but they didn't tell you who wrote the songs that you listened to in school and
right.
that you sang. And just singing through his book, I learned an awful lot about American history and about underreported things that happened. And so when I became a professional musician, which was, you know, you sort of just, in this kind of work, you wake up one day and you say, oh, I don't do anything but play music. I must be a professional musician. You know, if I'd been a doctor, I would have joined the AMA. If I was a lawyer, I would have joined the American Bar Association. And so my professional organization was the American Federation of Musicians. And I've been a lifelong member and was instrumental, along with a bunch of other people, in starting a local for traveling musicians, and served as the president for a long time. And now I'm retired from that position and just a regular rank and filer, but a believer in people's ability to exercise their power and get what they need in their workplace. And mine just happens to be in clubs and theaters and festivals and places like that.
Well, you perform in such a range of places, everything from libraries to big, huge festivals and everything in between. Back to Woody Guthrie for a moment. You said that was the first book of music that you learned, and he is such a poet and a populist. And the CD that you have created this past year is full of some of his best-known works and some that are more obscure. How did you choose what to include?
Well, I should say, first of all, that 2012 was the centenary of Woody's birth. He was born on Bastille Day, July 14th, 1912, in Okemah, Oklahoma. And I have been a lifelong student of his music, quite by accident. I checked that book out of the library because the first page was chord diagrams. And I thought, oh, this is a guitar instruction book with a bunch of songs you can practice with. when his 100th birthday was coming around, I decided to take 45 years of my experience with his music, which not only includes learning songs from that book and from lots of other sources, but having been invited about 5 or 6 years ago into the Woody Guthrie archives by Nora Guthrie, who was Woody's daughter and the person who was in charge of the library. She's an old friend. And lots of people in over the years, Billy Bragg and Wilco were the first that were the public knew about to come in and complete some of the literally thousands of songs for which we either don't know what the melody is or were obviously never finished. So when I put together this album, I chose some stuff that I thought was iconic of his. I chose some things that meant a lot to me, early songs that I had learned. I wanted to include some things I found in the archives, a particular recitation I thought was really important that people hear called "This Is Our Country Here." And then some of the things that I completed, though not all of them. And because I thought, this being the centenary, that there would be dozens of Woody Guthrie tribute albums, I really didn't want this to be a tribute album per se, but rather I wanted to gather a collection of songs that I thought really painted a picture of what, at least it seemed to me, that Woody Guthrie saw in this country. And it was a big picture.
It's an enormous picture. We're going to hear an excerpt from the first track on the album, "Biggest Thing That Man Has Ever Done."
I am just a lonesome traveler, a great historical bum. Highly educated, from history I have come. I built the Rock of Ages, that was in the year one. That's about the biggest thing that man has ever done. Garden of Eden, that was in the year of two. Joined the Apple Pickers Union, now always paid my dues. I'm the man that signed the contract to raise the rising sun. That's about the biggest thing man has ever done. On the pyramids, the Tower of Babel too. I opened up the ocean, let the migrant children through. I fought a million battles, and I never lost a one. That's about the biggest thing that man has ever done.
Biggest Thing That Man Has Ever Done, that's the first track on the CD. And John, that's kind of a string band type sound, and you've got some wonderful collaborators. Kathy Mattea is doing vocals, and Tim O'Brien. The whole CD is full of some wonderful collaborations.
Well, I think a lot of people heard and thought that this was going to be a tribute album. So a lot of people jumped on board and were anxious to be involved, even though I kept saying, no, that's not what it is. But I spent a couple of days up in Nashville where a lot of my pals live. And, you know, Tim and Kathy and the great Bryn Davies, who played bass on this, and lots of different people came out. They're all friends of mine, and the opportunity to sit in a room and just play music for the afternoon, most of it was first takes, and it was just great fun. And in the kind of, you know, ragged but right way that Woody played his own music.
Yeah, he did. He was pretty relaxed about it. He'd play just about anywhere and any time.
And this particular song was one of the very first ones I ever learned. Woody Guthrie Folk Songs, the book that I took out, was arranged alphabetically. And this was toward the front, because, of course, it began with B.
And it's almost a history of mankind that he somehow gets into just a few verses.
Oh, well, it's a great braggart's song. And the song continues through the American Revolution, and the original verses, there were several versions of this song that Woody wrote. One ended during World War II, you know, we're going to beat Hitler and all the all the fascists and Nazis, and that'll be the biggest thing that man has ever done. Later versions, and the one I recorded was sort of a combination of all these versions, the people are building a peaceful world, and that'll be the biggest thing that man has ever done. So it was an opportunity to, start off as with a lot of braggadocio and have fun along the way. There's a lot of related songs, A Man Who Rode the Mule Around the World, or I Was Born About 10,000 Years Ago. And in fact, this song, even the rhythm of those words, da 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 da, are all jigs, and this one was originally a 6/8 jig, and we sort of shoehorned it into the string band form.
Well, speaking of string band and instruments, you are a multi-instrumentalist. Once you got that mail order guitar at the age of 14, you just took off and never looked back. What are some of the instruments that you play?
Quite literally, actually. I left Wisconsin in 1970 to go to college over at a little college in Minnesota, St. John's University. And while I was there, there were some kids from Arkansas who were also going to school there, and none of them played music, but they brought instruments from home just to fend off the kind of homesickness that would strike a kid from Arkansas spending the winter in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I was visiting him one day in their room, and I saw a banjo sitting in a corner, and I said, "Can I borrow that? I've always wanted to play that thing." And that was the last anyone ever saw of me in my college career. And, I stuck out my thumb and hitchhiked around the Appalachian South starting in about 1972, digging up banjo players. And, you meet a banjo player, and you're going to meet a fiddle player, and you're going to meet a mandolin player, and you're going to meet people who tell big stories or call dances or sing gospel music. And it was just one big feast for someone who was interested in music in all its many forms, and also the way music works in communities, which was far more interesting than learning to play a musical instrument. But it all kind of went hand in hand. From there it was, hey, you play the banjo, why don't you try the fiddle? Okay. And someone handed me a hammer dulcimer, and I thought, why not? And then it was an auto harp. Sure, a mountain dulcimer? Okay. There was no in my vocabulary back when I was at that young an age. And it's still rare for me. I mean, I'm still, learning to play musical instruments that I have the good sense not to play on stage. But I just love sound and the cultural connection that it brings.
We're going to hear you playing the hammer dulcimer on this one. It's called Mail Myself to You.
I'm going to wrap myself in paper. I'm going to dot myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you. Oh, I'm gonna tie me in a little red string. I'm gonna tie blue ribbons too. Climb up into my mailbox, and I'm gonna mail myself to you.
You're known as quite a virtuoso on the hammer dulcimer. Has that been a labor of love over the years?
Oh, they're all labors of love. It's sort of like being the best left-handed tuba player in the state of Wisconsin. There's just not a lot of hammer dulcimer players. But part of it was that when I was a kid, I always wanted to play the drums, but my mother had the good sense to forbid it. She just did not want to have 9 children, a set of drums, and her in the same house. So when I got a hold of a hammer dulcimer, here was an instrument with which you could play melodies, but it was also a percussion instrument. It's like, you know, for people who have not seen it, it's a little bit like the guts of a piano without the keyboard. And as many of your listeners know, what happens when you press a key on the piano, a hammer strikes a string, and this was the instrument that inspired keyboard players to combine the two instruments, and all of a sudden you had what's known today as the piano. So it's great fun, and more than almost any of the other instruments, there are no rules because it has so little cultural footprint in the traditional world for most people. So, you know, I play probably the widest variety of music that I play on the hammer dulcimer.
And in that case, we heard it combined with the soprano sax.
Yeah, it was when that's from one of my earlier, that was recorded for an earlier album called Mail Myself to You, which was one of the 8 kids' albums that I did. And I just was lying around in bed one morning, half asleep, and thought, well, what would happen if Woody had visited Cuba and gotten in with the musicians there? And that's kind of how I described it to the band that was working with me. And then that arrangement just sort of organically created itself.
You've done such a wide variety, as you mentioned, of genres and focus areas, from children's music, pop music, acoustic music, broadside ballads, you know, full-blown rock music. Where are you these days?
Well, my roots have always been in folk music. And, you know, in the mid-1990s, I was writing songs that were just experimenting with the edges of where that could go. And hence, that stuff, I did a bunch of stuff that was, you know, sounded a lot more modern. But my heart and my focus has always been in the acoustic music world. And that's kind of what I'm doing these days. Doing a lot of stuff that's focused on the song rather than on the treatment of the song.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm doing an album right now which is real bare bones. It's you know, with rare exception, it's just me and a musical instrument, recorded live, and just chronicling the writing that I'm doing about a variety of different subjects. You know, when I first left Wisconsin, I spent a lot of time in coal mining country, and I've been writing a lot about that. And I'm a new grandfather, so I'm, you know, like all new grandparents, just stupid for my little granddaughter.
Congratulations.
And well, thank you. And when I come up there, I'll be happy to show anybody all the 700 pictures I have on my phone of her.
Is she stimulating more children's songs?
Well, that and the experience of what it's like to be a 60-year-old man still not understanding what it means to feel old. I still feel more creative than I've ever felt. I'm more energetic than I feel like I've ever been. And it's you know, sort of pushing the bounds of what it means to be this age. I mean, I think one of the things is that my audience has grown up with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just at a festival in North Carolina, and I was, it seems strange to say, I was one of the older acts there. And all these young bands were coming up to me saying, oh, man, I used to come and see you when I was a kid, and I grew up on your CDs. And now they're all playing music. So I guess they turned out all right despite their early influences.
Probably because of their early influences. Well, you're known to have a great stage show. Do you do a lot of storytelling in between songs?
I do. And that happened completely by accident. I was, when I first started off playing, and this is 40 years ago now, because this is the 40th anniversary of when I started getting paid to do whatever this is that I do. I was playing primarily music that I had, collected in the field, and it was mostly in the Appalachian South. And when I would play other places, you know, you go to New York City and you might as well be talking about music from the moon. It's so culturally different. And I wanted to create, you know, an environment in which the song could be as appreciated by the listener as it was by me. So I would create this little vignette, all based on how and where I learned the song, in an effort not to be pedantic. You know, I learned this song, or I wrote this song because, which I find, you know, boring and dreadful. And so I tried to make him entertaining. And so when I go back to a place and I would just sing the song, people would come up to me after and say, well, what happened to the story? That was, I like that as much as the song. And that's when I first started thinking, oh, well, maybe I'm on to something here. And then I ended up marrying a professional storyteller and the die was really cast. Because language and the power of story is an important thing to both my wife and I, and it dominates our, you know, dinner conversations, the way that we, you know, describe our day. It's like a, you know, a linguophile's feast.
That sounds marvelous.
It's really exciting. I mean, when we got married, what was our wedding present to one another? We bought the entire 22-volume Oxford English
Dictionary. Did you really? Oh.
Yeah, that's how we're word nerds.
You and so, many of our listeners. Oh boy, that's wonderful.
Well, it's you know, I've always loved language, and to hear. I just got back from the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, and talk about living in heaven for a weekend for people who love the way that language is used, not just for the acrobatic skill of it, but for the ability to speak beautifully and at the same time tell a compelling story. You put those two together, it's just hard to beat, and it's the kind of treat that I try to give my listeners as well.
I'm going to be playing some of these spoken stories for Halloween. There are some great scary stories that have come out of that festival. And we'll be listening to some murder ballads and things like that. And you've got a couple of massacre stories on this on this CD.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I was most moved by in learning Woody's songs when I was a teenager is he would talk about these events. And we're so used to hearing about things that are just made up. You know, it's you know, some kind of apocalyptic thing in a movie. But in reading the little introductions to these songs, I realized, oh my goodness, this song, The Ludlow Massacre, really happened. And you are never going to hear about it in school. Or here is Calumet, Michigan, Christmas Eve, 1913. This really happened. And Woody's presentation was, this is a part of your history. This tells you a little bit about who you are and where you came from and where you belong. And so when I was doing this album, I said, I got to do one of these songs. And I just couldn't decide between Ludlow and 1913.
Take a trip with me in 1913 to Calumet, Michigan, in the copper country. I'll take you to a place called Italian Hall, where the miners were having a big Christmas ball. I'll take you through a door and up a high stair. Singing and dancing is there everywhere. Let you shake hands with all the people you'll see. Watch the kids dance round the big Christmas tree. Ask about work and you ask about pay. They'll tell you that they make less than a dollar a day. Working in the copper claims and risking their lives. So it's fun to spend Christmas with their children and wives.
Well, Woody has set up a beautiful scene there, the Christmas ball, but things disintegrate pretty quickly. There's a fire, right?
Well, no, there actually isn't a fire. the what happened is it was in the midst of a strike against the copper company.
Oh, and, that's right.
And the copper company thugs were outside, and this was a second floor. This is a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. The miners were having their Christmas ball on the second floor of the Italian Hall. The company men were downstairs, and they opened the door and yelled up that there was a fire, and then locked the door. And people struggling to get out, 73 people, mostly children, suffocated in that stairway. And Woody, you know, this happened when Woody was 1 year old. So Woody obviously was not there and didn't grow up hearing about this, but read a book about a woman who was there and ended up creating this story creating the song based on the true events. And Woody was really amazing about that. Many of your listeners have heard the song Deportees.
Oh, sure.
The plane wreck in Los Gatos Canyon is sort of the subtitle of it. And that really happened, and I happened to be in that area playing in Fresno, California on the 64th anniversary of that event. And I went over to this where it happened, and nobody in that valley in the Los Gatos Canyon had ever heard about this. And you just think, here was this major calamity that happened right here. It's not a big place. And no one would know about it had Woody not plucked something from the 24-hour news cycle, or maybe even 15-minute news cycle as there is today, and memorialize it in a way that not only told us what happened, but gave us important lessons that can be derived from it. And it's one of the things that I musically grew up with, understanding and believing that music is powerful, and that it can tell us great stories and keep reminding us of those stories long after they're forgotten in every other medium.
And it's so important to continue doing that, these meaningful, informative songs that memorialize and help us remember collectively about what's important. And what
well, the only kind of, you know, we tend to think that the only history we ever get is in school. And most of us don't take a history class after we're 16 years old, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at, you know, there is this thing on television called the History Channel, which teaches us how to catch catfish and renovate old jukeboxes. Now, there's nothing remotely historical about the History Channel anymore. So where do we go? Where do we get our information? It's the modern dilemma. You know, we're in an election year, and where do people get their information that they can trust? You get it from lots of different sources, and I've always felt like as though music was an important carrier of story. And it's one of the things that Woody challenged me to do early on, and I found great interest and love of doing.
And we're so grateful that you do. And you have a huge discography, well over 30 recordings at this point. I think you're working on, three dozen now, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
And it's a shame to focus only on this recording that you've done of Woody's songs. It's a wonderful recording, and I love it. We've played it a lot here on Simply Folk. But you have such a breadth and depth of a creative history, and there's so much more. And I know during your stage shows you'll be providing a variety of music.
Yeah, it's, you know, I go through the whole catalog. I mean, some stuff, you know, you have a couple hours that you can be with people, and sometimes you just get on a particular course of thought with the audience. And it's a great thing about being a soloist is I don't work from a set list. I just go out there and I pick a first song, and then let's see where the ride takes us. And it makes every show unique, and hopefully with the homework that I do before I get to a town, makes it, you know, something that the people there know, oh, well, he's really in Menominee tonight, or he's really in Madison or in Wausau, rather than he's just performing show B from his presets. It's It's fun to have a big pool of stuff that you can go back and pull from.
It makes for a meaningful experience. And speaking of Wausau Menominee in Madison, that's where you'll be Thursday, November 1st at the John Muir Auditorium. I believe that's in the school there in Wausau. And then at the Mabel Tainter Theater in Menominee on Friday, the 2nd of November. And then Saturday evening, you'll be in Madison at the Barrymore Theater. And for information, you have got to have the best URL of any folk musician I have ever met. You must have been in it early. It's folkmusic.com.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to make hundreds of dollars selling that domain one day. Well, you know, I was a reluctant early participant in the internet. I had a son, my eldest son could get lost for days surfing the web. And when a friend of mine came and said, come on, you got to get on the web. One day he showed up at a show in Baltimore, just opened up his laptop and said, here's your site. It's completely constructed. give me the site. I will push this button and you will be live. And I said, I don't know. He said, it's a great organizing tool. And I said, oh, that is just so below the belt. Push the button, okay? And you found my soft spot.
Well, it's a rich site. There is so much there to find. And you can find out about more tour dates and all of those recordings, not to mention the books and poetry that you enjoy reading and what your other musical influences are, all of that at folkmusic.com. Why don't we close with one last song from the CD, which, by the way, is called This Land, Woody Guthrie's America. My guest is John McCutcheon. John, what do you think would be the most appropriate song to finish with?
Oh, well, the one song that people know all over the world, literally, is This Land Is Your Land. And Nora Guthrie, before I was doing this album, we had Mail Myself to You had been picked up by the Postal Service for a Christmas commercial. And she said, you know, people come to me all the time saying, we want to use This Land Is Your Land, but it's really difficult to find a good version of it because everybody thinks everyone has recorded it. So, in fact, almost no one has recorded it. So she said, whatever you do, do a really fun version of This Land Is Your Land. So hopefully this qualifies as honoring her request.
As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond desert. Was sounding. Oh, it said this land was made for you and me.
Well, the sun came shining as we were strolling, and we felt waving, and the dust clouds rolling.
As the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting. It said this land was made for you and me.
A great high wall there that tried to stop me. said private property on the other side. It didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. In the city square, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. I just stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me?
This land is your land, this land is my land.
As I go walking that freedom highway, nobody living can ever turn me back. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land.
For you and me.